We're back on Money Life, where it's time to talk to somebody who I know you guys are excited when I have him on the show, because I'm always hearing from you, when is he coming back? Well, he's back now, and his name is Andrew Foster. He is the Chief Investment Officer at Seafarer Capital Partners, the lead manager of the Seafarer Overseas Growth and Income Fund. That's SFGIX, a fund with about $2.1 billion in assets that, by the way, is soft closed at this point. So if you like it, you may not be able to do anything with it, but you could look instead at Seafarer Overseas Value. That's SFVLX, and that fund is still open to everybody. If you're interested, seafarerfunds.com is the website. Andrew Foster, thanks so much for joining me again on Money Life.
Chuck, it's always great to be here. Thanks for inviting me on.
We are living through these proverbial interesting times with the pandemic and what's happening globally. And I have to start in an interesting place, because our first interview on today's show was with an analyst who's in India. And the first question I asked him is, how much of what we see and hear in the States is what you're living through there, and how bad is it or what have you? Because there was a time not that long ago when we kept hearing how bad things were in India. That story has ebbed and abated to some extent. You know, where are they actually on the ground? And his answer is, it kind of depends on where you are on the ground. Well, you cover the entire emerging world. They all went into the pandemic at the same time, but they're definitely not coming out of it at the same time. So what does that say for emerging markets and the now and the next?
Well, yeah, you know, I think the emerging markets remain in a, with respect to the pandemic, remain in a tricky place. We had three countries last year in 2020, South Korea, China, and Taiwan, navigate the pandemic much better than the rest. And they did so through protocols that kept people healthy. And that allowed their economies to function better than most of the other emerging markets. And their stock markets generally responded better last year. Meanwhile, countries like India, you mentioned, Brazil, and some others really struggled with the spread of the pandemic and made even worse by the Delta variant. And but the hardest part for all of these countries, inclusive of South Korea, China, and Taiwan, is that the Delta variant has begun to really spread, and many of them have not had the access to vaccines that the United States has enjoyed. Even when they have had access, it's often been the China vaccine that is apparently not as effective against any variant. And consequently, we're still struggling with COVID. That said, you know, earnings are rebounding because people are starting to live with the disease, as is partly the case in India. And also the implementation of the vaccine in some places has allowed life to return to not normal, but some semblance of normality. And that means companies are beginning to see their revenues expand and earnings grow again. So we're actually looking at a very fast rate of growth predicted this year of over 60% earnings growth collectively from the emerging markets. I suspect that won't be achieved because the pandemic rolls on, but that's what is being suggested by the sell side, the investment banks that track this stuff.
In terms of emerging market economies and where they are right now, it's hard enough in the United States, where we trust the numbers completely, to look at numbers where, hey, you know, if you do a year over year comparison, obviously everything is great right now because we came to a full stop. If you look ahead a year from now, we'll be going, oh, maybe not so good because we're coming off of these highs. But what do you make of the numbers you're seeing in terms of economic recovery and how that's going to keep going forward?
Well, I think it's a cloudy picture. I will tell you that the 60% figure that I cited, I don't personally believe will come about. That's not because of necessarily, that's a projection by folks that are trying to do their best to figure out where earnings will wind up this year. I don't think they're necessarily falsifying that number, but I think they are being, as is often the case, way over optimistic. I think that while a sharp rebound from a pretty dismal earnings period last year is underway, I don't think we'll achieve 60%. I think it'll be closer to 40%. 30 to 40%, I think, is more reasonable based on the corporate results that I'm seeing. And that's accentuated by the fact that, as you were alluding to, how's the recovery going? China, the biggest constituent of the emerging markets and is the single biggest constituent of the 60% number, is slowing quite a bit this summer and looks to slow through the end of the year. That's partly due to the Delta variant spreading in China and causing China to have to shut down factories again. But it's also because of a pretty wild environment in China with respect to changing policy. Some people are calling it regulation in China that's happened over the summer that is putting a damper on corporate activity and growth.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about China. I mean, regulations is one thing. Trade wars or potential trade wars or trade skirmishes, because I think we've been more focused on other things, so it hasn't been full-blown trade wars, are certainly in the offing. Things were hinted at that they could be a lot worse. They seem to have calmed down. Where are they headed next?
Well, you know, I think it's a pretty murky environment in China. We still invest there and find companies that I think are worthwhile, but very, very selectively. What's going on, Chuck, is that people are using the word regulation to describe some of the events that I'm sure your listeners have observed or read about over the last few months there. In particular, one sector that was very much adored by foreign investors, not in our portfolios because we had misgivings about it, was the for-profit education sector. And over the summer, China declared that for-profit education sector would have to convert to not-for-profit status. And in the blink of an eye, several hundred billion dollars of stock value was wiped out without any warning. Again, we stayed clear of this because we had misgivings over this sector for a myriad reasons, but the extent of this change really shows how capricious the environment is in China. I don't personally like the word regulation to describe it because regulation happens when you have a lawmaking body make a law, and you have a very adept rulemaking body translate that law into rules that the industry or the portion of society must follow. This is more of a fiat action, a fiat control action by the government to simply change an industrial structure overnight with huge and sweeping consequences. China's really rewriting the books as we speak, and I think it's going to put a very substantial dampener on growth. So if you pick up an economist's forecast from the big investment banks or strategists, you'll see China is scheduled to grow at a roughly 6% rate for the next decade and maybe even beyond. Because of that, some believe China's economy will eclipse that of the United States in absolute size. I think it's time for people to put a red pen to those numbers, and I think China's going to see a deceleration economically, probably start thinking about 4% growth rates or maybe even lower, and that point where it surpasses the U.S. is ever more in doubt, or at least it's being pushed out much further in my view. I still think there are excellent companies there worth investment, but I think approaching China broadly or thematically can be very problematic at this stage.
That's very interesting and not a take that I've heard from a lot of folks. You know, we're at a spot where the domestic market has been the best market in the world and the place to invest for so long. And my next question was going to be, do you believe that we're about to head into a time where diversification will really pay off, that you're going to be able to generate better returns from emerging markets than you can domestically? But having heard that take on China, I'm questioning whether or not you've already answered it. I mean, I guess the question has to go beyond China to say in the rest of emerging markets, can you generate bigger returns than you can generate here going forward?
Well, I think the thing to think about, Chuck, is I think you can benefit from diversification even in emerging markets, which is where I do my work. You know, normally I am not one to be negative about passive investing. I think there are a lot of merits to index funds or ETFs if applied correctly in one's portfolio. But right now in emerging markets, I really favor a more selective approach because of the conditions we just discussed in China. I think things are slowing faster than people realize. So one has to be really careful about the kinds of stocks one holds. But I think there is merit to holding those certain stocks because I think the nature of investing in emerging markets is changing. You know, 30 years ago when the term was first developed, it was really applying to a set of fast-growing economies with often mediocre companies. That they were mediocre, but they grew fast because the countries were growing fast. Well, 30 years later, the countries are slowing down because they've often reached a lot of their potential. And also the changes in the policy environment, for instance, that I alluded to in China, are putting a further damper on growth. But that doesn't speak to the condition of some of the companies, which have pulled away from being mediocre to globally excellent and globally competitive. Two examples that I think many of your audience members would have heard of are Samsung Electronics and Taiwan Semiconductor, two companies that are literally leading and rewriting the nature of the semiconductor industry and absolutely pulling ahead of many of their domestic U.S. peers. These companies were actually laughed at 20 years ago. They were discussed as not being innovative or not being able to protect, you know, key technological intellectual properties. And instead, they're rewriting the rule book in these industries 20 years later. I think you're going to see more such companies over the next 20 years, and not just in semiconductors, but in healthcare, pharmaceuticals, biopharmaceuticals. You're going to see them even in entertainment and media industries. You're going to see them in possibly in food and consumer product industries. So you're having companies from the emerging markets really emerge. The companies are emerging, even if the countries aren't so much. And I think you're going to see companies become world-class competitive, and they're probably to serve a place in the portfolio to round out the diversification and get returns.
But what that also suggests is that at some point, while we call what you do an emerging markets fund, you're going to be looking for global companies that just happen to be located in a part of the world that isn't covered by somebody else who's buying global companies that aren't covered by your part of the world, right?
Bingo. You got it. Okay. Couldn't have said it better.
Okay. So with all that said, in the limited time we've got left, I mean, we've talked about China, we've hinted at India, but which are the emerging markets where you are finding the most opportunities, and which are the ones where you're not? What are the ones where it's really tough to be there now? And what are the ones where this is where I feel the markets and the economy are making it that you want to make sure you've got this covered in your portfolio?
Well, I think India is an interesting case because I think there are some real contender, some great companies that are maybe in some cases contenders to go global. And India is a little bit of exception to what I just said. It's one of the few larger economies that is achieving and probably can achieve higher rates of growth for quite some time to come. The problem is India is so darn expensive. It's one of the, collectively at least, it's one of the most expensive and therefore one of the most unapproachable markets for at least my team right now when we look across that landscape. Further, I think the pandemic is still really wreaking some havoc there, as your other guests apparently discussed. And so I think the recovery is very uneven. Stocks have done beautifully this year, but I think it's really being goosed, the market, by very, very easy monetary policy from the central bank. And I think one has to be very careful about the stocks one holds in India at present, even though the market has been hot. China, ironically, even though the market's been very beaten up by some of the action that we just discussed, the policy action, I think it's actually a more approachable landscape than it's been in many years because people are starting to realize some of the risks that exist in China, and yet you can still find some excellent companies there. But where we've been most active overall in our portfolios is in South Korea. We've seen really wonderful companies there trade at very low valuations, companies that are growing, producing strong cash flows, and have good balance sheets, but they are just not kept in the favor of investors because they seem to be caught up in one trade war or another or what have you, and we're happy to hold them. So we have a fairly large allocation to South Korea these days. The other place where we've been very active more recently is in Latin America, parts of Brazil and Mexico, and these countries are definitely struggling with slowdowns and the pandemic, but we found a lot of value there recently.
Andrew, great stuff as always. This is why my audience loves having you back. I'm looking forward to our next conversation already.
Great, Chuck. Thanks so much again.
That's Andrew Foster, the Chief Investment Officer at Seafarer Capital Partners, lead manager for the Seafarer Overseas Growth and Income Fund, SFGIX, and also he's co-manager of the Seafarer Overseas Value Fund, SFVLX. Learn more at seafarerfunds.com, on Twitter at Seafarer Capital. Money Life. We'll be right back. Don't miss anything.